Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What do some professional sports leagues and unscripted TV series makers have in common? They're employing a new venture, Play Anywhere, to give their content an interactive kick. Chief Strategy Officer Peter Scott joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. The TV making environment in Dallas, Texas is warming up thanks in part to Southside Studios. We'll check in with Southside Overseer Stephen Demler later this hour. Also ahead, a big meeting of Writers Guild and TV producer minds, our classic trivia question, and the changing landscape of college football television. That's our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on nearly 40, that's right, 40 different podcast venues, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 77 degrees at the top of the hour. Good start of your Friday afternoon on the East Coast. Good mid-morning on the West Coast, wherever you are across the country, around the globe. Thanks for tuning us in. The program all about TV's current and future. This is our final episode of our 16th year on the air, and we are delighted to have you with us. We have some terrific people coming away over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in. And when you do, this is the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And if you don't like the phone, use our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, as always, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions and other people can be live with you. Before we get into the program, we have some wonderful news to share with you. We learned from a website called podnews.net, that is a podcast website that talks about the world of podcasting, that they did a story on us. And we learned that we are now on nearly 40, that's right, 40 podcast platforms. So I want to take a moment to welcome a bunch of new podcast platforms that have joined us over the last few weeks alone. Organizations like AntennaPod, Cosmatic, CastBox, Bullhorn, GoodPods, Fountain, Jam, G-Potter, Luminary, Podcast Republic, I love that name, Moon FM, PodStation, Overcast, Podcast Guru, and Steno.fm. And again, if you want to check out the listing, go to podnews.net. And that's not all. Apple Podcasts, which has been with us as a podcast platform since early this year, has given this program a 4.5 stars out of 5-star review. As you know, at podcast, you know, 5-star is the top rating you get. So I want to thank Apple Podcasts for giving us that 4.5 5-star review out of 5-star review for some of our recent episodes, especially the episode we did a couple of months ago with Jeff from Blavity TV. So thank you so much, Apple Podcast people, and to all the new podcast sites that have joined us over the last couple of weeks, we thank you for taking our show. Stay tuned to us. All of you listening there, spread the word. We appreciate each and every one of you. And we will talk with Peter Scott of Play Anywhere from Dallas, Texas, after these news notes. For the first time in weeks, there's an effort to restart new contract negotiations between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of TV and Film Producers, known as AMPTP. At any moment, AMPTP President Carol Lombardini will connect face-to-face with Writers Guild Chief Negotiator Ellen Sturtzman. If this encounter proves fruitful, deal-making may resume in a matter of days. Reaction from various guild members range from cautious optimism to apathy. As for the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA walkout, now in week 4, that union will not participate in this meeting and has not reached out to AMPTP about a similar back-to-the-bargaining-room olive branch. If anything breaks along that line, because that meeting is expected to begin within the next couple of hours, we will keep you posted. Now, quickies. Multi-channel subscription bundle Fubo now has 1.2 million customers in North America, mostly in the United States. AMC is on track to premiere The Walking Dead spinoff series, The Ones Who Live, next year. The deal was made before both the writers and actors' strike took place, and production will not start until both strikes are settled. And ION's Friday night WNBA basketball games are up 42% in viewership since their debut on May 26th. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live in Dallas, Texas, which ironically is the subject of our second guest in the next half hour, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Strategy Officer of new interactive TV venture Play Anywhere, Peter Scott. Peter, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you. Really excited to chat today and walk everybody through what we're doing. And a lot of your news notes had a lot of touch points to how we can facilitate, create new revenue streams for the business.
That's great to hear, Peter. Thank you for that. And so let's get into it. What is Play Anywhere, and how do you want to make your mark? And make sure we do this in layman's language. Everybody here gets the thought of this. How does Play Anywhere want to tie in with what looks like an explosion of interactive TV services?
Yeah, I mean, Simon, interactive TV has been around for 20, 25 years, and I think the general consensus for your listeners out there is basically if you're sitting on your couch and you're watching a professional game or reality TV, and there's something inside that show that you want to purchase, whether that's, you know, the couch that they're sitting on, the swimsuit or the bottle of wine, how do we basically make that happen? How do we work with TV manufacturers, content owners, to allow someone to basically make that purchase, potentially in the future, make a bet on the screen while you're watching NBC Sunday Night Football, or interact with designated ads on the screen? So what we're doing is we're facilitating and creating a new rights category that we're calling interactive rights, which really hasn't existed before because the technology and the know-how just hasn't been there. So we're slowly, taking our clearinghouse platform, which enables the sharing of that revenue. So if you sell that bottle of wine or basically make a bet on screen, who basically gets the revenue from that transaction? So that's what we've facilitated to make it happen.
And who are you working with so far?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we signed two large deals, one with La Liga. For your listeners, that's the Spanish soccer league. It's in over 120 countries around the world distributed. It's probably the third most popular soccer league in the world. Barcelona, Madrid are obviously the two important teams. So what we've done is coordinate an agreement with them to be their interactive platform with broadcast partners around the world to enable gamification or purchasing of e-commerce, a goal gets scored, you pop up a jersey, or interacting with ads and sponsorships while watching the live games. So that's our biggest partner. And the other one is our friend at Dentsu, which, again, for your listeners, a large agency, owns a bunch of rights in Asia, Olympics being one of them. So we're sort of moving through, talking to all the leagues here in the States as well, the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball. I've done some trials with NHL to basically see if this is something that fans want to be able to do while they're watching their favorite team, to interact with the broadcast, maybe get some extra stats, again, maybe make a bet while they're watching or purchase a jersey. So we think the muscle and what people want to do when they watch live content is evolving, and we think there's a percentage of the audience that could generate new revenue for all parties involved.
Is there any business either with sports leagues or with unscripted producers closer to home, let's say here in the United States?
Yeah, I think, again, all conversations, we've done some trials with the NHL. So we worked with our friends at Turner Broadcasting, where I used to work. We did some trials during the Stanley Cup where we would allow fans in a closed beta to sort of interact with the content, whether it be stats, whether that be trivia questions, whether that be being able to buy a jersey from either Las Vegas or from Florida. And again, I think we're trying to introduce a whole new media rights category where the leagues could see a benefit of creating these new revenue streams and potentially collecting first-party data, information for who is interacting and then provide a value exchange to that user. So, yeah, we're talking to all the leagues here in the States. On the reality TV side, we're talking to a bunch of different shows, whether that be Big Brother, whether that be other like shows where you're watching the show and you may be interested in their location or purchasing something inside the show. So it's going to be an evolution. Think of QVC, I think, is the best example, where you're watching television, you call that 1-800 number. We think that will evolve to make this a new revenue opportunity across all genres, and we can enable that for that to happen.
You're hearing Peter Scott. He is the Chief Strategy Officer at the new interactive TV venture Play Anywhere. He joins us live from Dallas, Texas this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy you're with us as we mark the end of our 16th year as the program about TV's current and future. If you have a question or comment for Peter, make the phone go. Number you use, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming your way on Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, we will have our special anniversary edition, and we will kick year 17 off. We expect to have two executive guests, as we did last year, one each hour for the full hour. On our first hour, that's 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific, my lead guest and only guest of that hour will be the programming president of the CW, Brad Schwartz. We'll talk to him about some of the sports things he's working on with his network, Live Golf, the Atlantic Coast Conference football and basketball package that kicks in on CW stations in September, and the new NASCAR Xfinity Cup deal that will be kicking in 2025, and also the rest of that CW primetime and weekend lineup. Brad Schwartz, programming president of the CW, coming your way in our first hour of our special anniversary edition. That's 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern, noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, our regular start time here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your sense of the leagues you've dealt with? What is their sense of how interactivity is going to happen? First of all, we know that more and more smart TV sets and smart TV devices have the ability through Siri, through Google Assistant, through Alexa using artificial intelligence software for people to actually use the television set to order the product, to order the service, to call up information about an advertiser they see in a program. What's your sense of what the league is sensing about how interactivity is going to go through the TV set?
Yeah, I mean, I've been around the business for a long time. I was at Warner Brothers helping our teams negotiate TV deals. And there was a time where OTT, the streaming of content, you know, on a platform, the rights fees, the idea that just didn't, people weren't really thinking about that. It was really based on TV, but here we are today. And, you know, it's evolved where you're streaming on Netflix, Disney Plus, ESPN Plus. And so we think interactive rights and interactivity will be the new frontier for potential new revenue opportunities for the league. So like the leagues, we're open to seeing how folks could stream games on OTT platforms and mobile phones. They're open to listening and understanding where we think the revenue streams could be for interactive television. And I think like all leagues, they're looking for new ways to learn more about their fan, and they're looking for new ways to create revenue streams. So just like OTT was in, say, 10 years ago, where really no one knew what that was, and now it's become, you know, a whole industry, obviously, we think interactive television will be the same, where it would just be customary that if you see something on the screen that you want, you might hit a button on your remote control. You may even use your voice to basically transact, and we're doing all of that on the back end to connect all those different services.
Mm-hmm. What's the interest level also in video games as a way to be a revenue stream through the television set for sports leagues and for unscripted and for scripted TV programming? I know we're now at a point, for example, where you have shows like The Last of Us, video game show, a video game, Twisted Metal, that's released on Peacock. They're now becoming hits as a scripted TV series. But also, you now have video games on the television set, Samsung offering 3,000 games, plus including Fortnite. LG has their own game hub. Roku is now offering Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy games on their service, where you don't need a console like a PlayStation or an Xbox. You just use your voice, a voice remote, or you use a joystick device that you just aim at the set. Has there been any thought about tying in video games with what you're doing?
Yeah, 100%. And that's a great question. I mean, I think you're seeing you know, where the video game industry makes more money than the film and TV business combined. And so I think it's smart for technology platforms like connected TVs to go and venture in that area, right, to provide a whole swath of different experiences for the user at home, especially video games becoming, you know, so popular. So what we've been doing is talking to gaming publishers and basically saying, hey, if you want to, you know, sell, you know, headsets or, you know, gaming equipment inside the game, we could enable that to happen. If you want to sell more skins in CSGO, you know, we can help make that happen by being the back-end clearinghouse to basically collect that money. So, yeah, you kind of look at it like anybody who's a publisher or has original IP is interested in basically making new revenue and collecting first-party data. So the publishers, you can look at you know, CSGO and Valve, they're just like the NFL in the sense that they create IP. They basically are serving a particular audience. So interactivity can layer on top, you know, of that vertical and that content type as well.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to the smart TV set makers like Samsung and LG and Vizio, mm-hmm. as well as Tele, which is the free TV set that's being offered to 500,000 customers this year, and if it works out, millions more next year, about some sort of direct relationship with them to sort of foster or really make this interactive game environment or interactive TV environment possible?
Yeah, we are. So we know the folks at Tele very, very well. We have spoken to Samsung, LG, Hisense, all those different makers of CTVs. I think the key is who owns the screen. So when you're watching the NFL on Sunday night on NBC or Monday Night Football on ESPN, who controls that screen? Is it the league, the rights holder, or the distributor? And that's what we're trying to bridge. Bring those three parties into the room and say, look, interactivity hasn't been contemplated as a real revenue source in the future. What we're saying is let's get everybody in the room, let's unlock these interactive rights, create new revenue streams for the parties involved, and then everybody be compensated. So I think that's really what we're trying to solve and really has been an incumbent problem with interactive rights is who owns the screen. So what we're trying to say to everybody, let's sit down, let's figure it out, let's unlock these rights so that in that scenario, the NFL gets a piece, NBC gets a piece, and depending if you're watching it on DirecTV or the Dish Network or on Comcast or Charter, they get a piece as well. So the idea is you're basically creating new revenue streams that currently just don't exist.
Dallas Franklin, who was the Chief Strategy Officer of Tele, was on our program over a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you heard
yep.
him discuss what that set is all about, the more you get a sense that what they're doing is the TV version of the iPhone, where you constantly get new apps, all sorts of apps every couple of months. They're really out to make TV a free deal. As well, and, of course, we keep reminding you, if you want to get Tele, you have to give them information about your likes, your dislikes, and so forth, and then they send applications, whether it's news that's personalized or ads that personalize to you. What do you think of Tele and their strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're the modern-day Nielsen box, right? For your viewers, you know, basically ratings are determined by a small number of households that have a Nielsen box, so that in that household, based on your demographics, they track what you're watching, and then that becomes the ratings number that gets, you know, given to advertisers. So I think what Tele's doing is basically they're looking at the ecosystem and saying, how can we make this more accurate, you know, better, and get more people to participate to show really what, you know, a true audience would look like. So I think Nielsen is somewhere between 45 to 65,000 boxes, but if Tele gets out there and they go with 100,000 or more, that could be a very, very, very valuable attribution opportunity to sort of help advertisers, content creators know who's watching their content.
Well, the thing about Tele is that they're bent on having 500,000, half a million sets in
mm-hmm.
consumers'
mm-hmm.
hands this year. as I mentioned before, if this works, they will make millions more available as early as next year. Now, we understand from Telly that the consumer response has been so huge. They, for example, they had like over 100,000 people respond positively within, you know, 36, 48 hours. Then it was over half of their goal, 250,000. Now we understand that they've had to stop sort of confirming consumer requests because they've come in so huge. So it must say something that that the consumer may be ready for something like this.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think obviously the free option is helpful, right? That if there's an exchange, I mean, I think that's what everybody has to understand about their own personal data and their own, you know, footprint is, what's the value that you're going to give me, that if I give you my data, that you're going to have, you know, more targeted ads, more things that I'm looking for. And I think if you ask every consumer, if there's a value exchange between what is served to he or she, I think they're willing to basically give up their data or user behavior because they want the value exchange to be more aligned with what they're looking for. So I think that says a lot about the business where, yes, you're getting a free TV, but in turn, maybe consumers are just sick and tired of ads, don't have any personalization to them. And this is an opportunity that as Telly basically signs up advertisers, you know, they can quickly, you know, hyper-serve the right ad, the right opportunity of time for the right person. So I think that's where I think you're seeing a blend of, hey, I want advertising to be personalized to me, and I also love the idea that I can get a free TV set. So we'll see where it goes. I think what's great about technology today is that you can make these TVs for an economical price. You can put it out in the ecosystem, and you can test, you know, whether this type of business model can work. And I think for us, you know, what a lot of people in the States probably don't understand is in Asia, T-commerce, or what they call television commerce, where you can make purchases and interact with content, is huge. It's very, very popular in South Korea, in China, where fans and TV watchers just are accustomed that it's just normal that they can make a purchase off of something they see on the screen. So we think that's where the muscle will change in the States. There won't be everybody who wants to watch an NFL game and sit there and interact with stats, but there'll be enough consumers that will basically want to interact. And if we can provide a clean, easy way to make a purchase, to make a wager, to interact with a brand, I think you'll see more and more people wanting to interact with the experience.
In a moment, we'll find out what role Play Anywhere may have in what may be a breakout of sports betting on television. We're talking with Peter Scott, the Chief Strategy Officer at Play Anywhere. He joins us live from Dallas, Texas this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're wrapping up our 15th year at the program All About TV's Current and Future. Wherever you're joining us from, we're happy to have you with us. Tom and Abba, I'm with you live from wherever you are, 77 degrees toward the bottom of the hour. If you question or comment, our main image with Peter, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And speaking of sports, you can catch me in person on Wednesday mornings, on Sports Newswire, that is Sports Grid Network's daily news information hour. It's 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. That's Sports Newswire, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, Amazon Freebie, and other multi-channel bundles. What is your sense of sports betting among the people you're working with? Do you get the sense that this may be the year, given the fact that more and more states now are accepting sports betting to some degree? You have the wherewithal with smart TV sets and devices to do sports wagering over the TV set. What's your sense of, A, how it will work? Will it finally happen this year to some degree? And what role could Play Anywhere make in that?
Yeah, I think it's another great question, Simon. So what's happening is most of the sports books want to be their own media companies. So that's why you see DraftKings TV or FanDuel TV or FanDuel buying TVG. What we're trying to work with the sports books is give us your APIs, meaning give us the ability for, as someone is watching NBC on Sunday night, that there's a version of the broadcast where you can watch, play, bet, and buy, and you can – during that game, quickly slide out, sign into your account, and make a bet on that screen. And why we're sort of pitching that to the books is we think there's more casual sports fans that they can turn into casual bettors. So we're working with a number of different books to get their APIs. We're already integrated with Betway, ironically, in Africa. And we're basically allowing fans to basically sign into their account and bet where the fans are. And I think eventually you'll start to see that. And the leagues will start to participate if they feel that they can get a percentage of the revenue, or either on a new sign-up or, say, every time a bet is made. And I think for the books, they're going to position themselves where there are more consumers, more casual sports fans. They can lower their cost of acquisition, which, as you know, is super, super expensive for them. And then with the Play Anywhere platform, we can actually personalize the bet. So like any sort of experienced sports bettor, there's hundreds and hundreds of bets on a given Sunday NFL game or baseball or NBA or NHL game. And what we'll do is we'll basically personalize that bet. So if, you know, if I'm a LeBron James fan and Simon is an Anthony Davis fan, I'll hyper serve LeBron James bets to you and you'll get Anthony Davis bets. So the idea is, I think we can help the whole ecosystem basically create more engagement, time spent on the telecast. Again, it might be an alternative telecast where here, sit down and watch this version like you're used to, and here's another version, an interactive version where you could basically watch, play, and bet, maybe watch with your friends, watch with an influencer, et cetera, et cetera. So we think the future is fans are going to create their own personalized experience of how they want to watch sports, and they'll sort of use the analogy, they'll turn on the knob that they want. So, Simon, there may be one day where people want to watch a football game with you, or may want to, you know, watch with a celebrity, like you're seeing with Cameo. So we think this is where the evolution is coming, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, the squeeze on looking for new revenue streams and technology advancing in a way that you can make all this happen.
FanDuel already has actually two TV services, FanDuel TV, formerly TVG Network, the All Horse Racing Channel, which mm-hmm. they've had now for nearly a year. And DraftKings has a channel on Samsung smart TV sets and maybe other smart TV sets, devices, and bundles down the road. Have you had any exploratory conversations with them or other organizations like BetMGM and others to do something?
Yeah, I mean, with both of them. And I think what we're trying to say to them is Godspeed. You know, good luck with you being a media company. If we can be supportive, we want to be supportive. I think what we're saying to them is if we can bring together a league and a broadcaster, and then integrate your APIs, we think it's a win-win for everybody in that ecosystem. So that's what we're working with each one of those books to get the associated APIs. And, you know, I have this luxury of traveling around the world in meeting with leagues, with broadcasters, you know, in Canada, in Brazil, in Europe, in Australia, and in Asia. And they all have the same problem, Simon, basically competing against time and attention. And they're all looking for new revenue streams. So not only is Play Anywhere, we think, going to be successful in the U.S., but it'll be successful in Canada and Mexico and South America and in Europe and Asia, because there's a need to create more time spent, engagement, and create new revenue streams. So we're excited about, you know, the opportunity to work with these IP holders. Again, could be sports, could be reality TV, to make all this happen.
Before we go, Peter, let's talk quickly whether Play Anywhere may get involved with two other aspects of television. One is scripted TV,
uh-huh.
and the second is Spanish language television, which is getting more and more into the sports world. You now have practically most of the major sports leagues have deals one way or another to carry their games, either regular season or playoff championship, on ESPN Deportes, on Telemundo, on Univision, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's a market that we're totally looking at, especially, you know, Brazil soccer and all the different soccer that happens down there. There's large media companies like Globo. The Spanish market is super important to not only, you know, folks in South America for obvious reasons, but here in the United States. And I think for us, which is really nice about our platform, is it's dynamic. So we can have all the questions be delivered in multiple languages. So it could be Spanish, Portuguese, German, French. But more importantly, it could be on reality TV shows. So again, just like we approach the leagues for their interactive rights will approach Big Brother, will approach, you know, The Bachelor and say, hey, look, we have this technology that would enable you to make new revenue streams by allowing the consumer to make a purchase on the screen of whatever merchandise you have inside your show. So I think for us, we're seeing just this general interest and, you know, solution where can they start to drive new revenue streams through interactivity. And again, I don't think that's going to be everybody, but there is a percentage, you know, I use the analogy, my daughter watches Gossip Girl on the big screen and, you know, she sees a black cocktail dress and I ask her, would you want to buy that cocktail dress? And, you know, she says, of course I would. And she says, are you building that technology? And I said, yeah, that's what we're trying to do. So there's this whole new generation that has an expectation through TikTok or through Instagram to make a purchase, right? And you're seeing that happen every day, 24/7. I think when it comes to the larger screen and all the different deals that are in place for distribution and ownership, we're just going to come in here and sort of facilitate that to happen.
So using that Gossip Girl example, scripted TV might be a direction for Play Anywhere at some point.
Oh, there's no question about it. We're talking to them now, and they see it as a big opportunity. You know, again, you know, Chip and Joanna Gaines of Magnolia Network, they have some interesting ideas around their content and what could be manifested through their shows. So there is interest, and I think a lot of folks just want a plug-and-play solution, and we think our SDK could work across multiple reality TV shows in multiple languages. So we're excited about that opportunity.
And we should point out that Roku is going to be coming out before the end of the year with a food show where it's a competition show where people are creating a very unique meal. And at the end of the show, if you want to get the winning meal, you can order it for delivery through your television set. So we'll keep you posted when that program is ready to go on the air. And if you want to know more about Play Anywhere, Peter Scott's venture, where he serves as chief strategy officer, here's where you go online, playanywhere.com. That's playanywhere.com, and we'll stay in touch with Peter and his crew, and if they have some very interesting ventures that will be coming your way, we will let you know. Again, the website is playanywhere.com. Peter Scott, thank you so much for coming on the program and helping us bring our 16th year on the air to a close. We do appreciate it, and all the very best to you and your people with your venture, and we will stay in touch. It's been great to have you with us.
Thanks, Simon. I really appreciate the conversation. About 107 degrees here in Dallas, so I'm glad everybody in New York is at a cool 77 degrees. So enjoy the cold weather back east for sure.
And of course, all the best to everybody down there. And let's keep the thoughts and prayers that this heat dome that everybody's got down there moves away very quickly. And certainly like now.
Yep, you bet. All right. Nice talking to you. Appreciate the time.
You're welcome, Jeff. You're very welcome, Peter. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy the weekend ahead.
Thank you so much.
Peter Scott, Chief Strategy Officer of Play Anywhere, joining us live from Dallas, Texas. And speaking of Dallas, Texas, when we come back, we will explore a very interesting venture that's happening down there called Southside Studios, which is becoming a major TV production player. We will speak live with Stephen Demler. He is the overseer of that organization. He will join us live, believe it or not, from Tampa, Florida, and he'll do so after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love old-time radio from the 30s, 40s, and beyond, check out Erie House. It gives you the best of thrilling old-time radio. Today, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, check out Erie House today on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7. At YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this completion edition of Year 16 of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Allen with you live from New York, 77 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Another great guest coming away this half hour ahead. Also coming up in a little bit, our classic trivia question of the week. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win a pair of nice prizes, a Chicago Greatest Hits CD, and an Uber card courtesy of AMC Networks. And we invite you to interact with our guests. Just give a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In recent years, Dallas, Texas, and for that matter, the state as a whole, has become a major place to have television shows come on the air. think shows like 9/11 Lone Star, American Crime was shot in Austin, Queen of the South, the long-running USA Network series based in Lorraine del Sur, that was shot as well. And one of the places where people are producing TV shows there is a place called Southside Studios. And joining us live from Tampa, Florida, is the overseer of Southside, Stephen Demler. Stephen, welcome in.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. And what are you doing in Tampa, by the way?
Oh, I'm based here. My company, Talent Entertainment Finance, we're based in Tampa. We're coming to Dallas, right, because of the great business environment, the new incentive, and, you know, essentially everything you just kind of laid out. And we're excited about making that move.
So it's very interesting that you're calling from Tampa, and our first guest, Peter Scott from Play Anywhere, we had him from Dallas. It's a very interesting juxtaposition of locations today. So what kind of activity is going on in the TV world in Dallas, and what's the contribution that your organization, Southside, is making?
Yeah, so you listed off a couple shows that have been shot there, and actually Queen of the South had been shot in Southside Studios previously, a couple of seasons of that. Last year, I believe it's season 3 of The Chosen, which was just picked up by CW. You know, it's a kind of a juggernaut TV show that also shot some of its stuff in the studio. But what we're doing basically is it's this real gem of a property. It's, you know, 5 minutes from kind of the Adolphus in the center of downtown Dallas, you know, 7 to 10, depending on lights, right, to Deep Ellum and the Bishop Arts District and all that. So it's beautifully located, and it was just kind of in need of a renovation, right, to bring it into the future. And then my company also has produced films and produced TV and financed, you know, different media. So it was a good partnership for us to come in. We can build it out to where the larger studios and indies need it to be in terms of quality, and then we can also help finance and drive projects to the studio. And because Dallas has such a history of, you know, putting out quality work, we have a pretty deep crew base to pull from. So it's for us, every box is checked, and we're going in heavy essentially to build it in kind of a premier destination in Texas to shoot film and TV.
Mm-hmm. What is drawing people to Dallas and, for that matter, all of Texas? Austin has become a television production center, not only for scripted shows. Many years you had Austin City Limits on PBS, one of the most popular shows of its kind on all of television. What draws people and crews to use Dallas and use Texas as their home base?
Yeah, it's a mixture of things, and it all depends on each project, right? Like the first is always economic, right? And that's why Texas getting behind, you know, 10xing the state incentive is so important. It removed a large kind of economic barrier for projects to make sense on the Excel spreadsheets, if you will. The other is the quality of crew. Like I was saying, Austin and Dallas both, Houston as well, have deep, you know, pretty deep benches. So we can support high quality productions here with the caliber of crew members you've got throughout the state. And then the third is the state itself, right? It is friendly for business, but it's also gorgeous, right? And has very diverse locations. So though I run a studio and, you know, a lot of stuff we want to shoot on our sound stages or use our production offices, the reality is every project also is going to need, or many projects are going to need, quality locations. And Dallas, Austin, and the state of Texas as a whole is, you know, it has a seemingly unending reserve of those. So it just makes it easy for productions to shoot here.
So talk about how big Southside is and some of the TV productions, let's say, over the last 6 months, last year, you've handled.
Yeah, so like I said, the most recent one was The Chosen, and being kind of the most current, most popular. And the studio will almost go dark during renovations because it's a ground-up renovation, and we're going to have 6 sound stages ranging from about 8,000 square feet up to 25,000 square feet. We're going to have post-production facilities, 20,000 square feet of props, a mill to build sets, production offices, camera packages, G&E packages, and also a state-of-the-art virtual production studio with a 270-degree LED volume and ceiling for shooting, you know, virtual productions work on as well. And that'll carry out through the first quarter of next year when we're kind of fully back open. But the entire property as a whole, right, it's a full service. We can accommodate anywhere in your production pipeline. We've got something for you. It's 11 acres. The soundstage space alone is about 125,000 square feet, you know, and that's not to talk about all the posts and other facilities. I mean, we're gonna have a 30-seat movie theater on site for companies to screen their commercials, to screen cuts of their, you know, rough cuts of their TV shows, of their films, and hopefully to get involved with the Dallas Film Festival, Oak Cliff Film Festival, and participate in kind of building out the artistic community in Dallas. It's a pretty substantial project.
Mm-hmm. Any talk about maybe having a Dallas TV festival the same way that you have ATX in Austin?
Not yet, but we're open to everything. So that's one thing we're going to do, and I intend to do with the studio, is to leverage some of the media we invest in, right, and bring that to Dallas, and not just have a studio there, but create Dallas as even more of a destination for creatives to come. And that's, you know, for example, we just shot a film. We produced a film in New Zealand with Elijah Wood and Ant Timpson as director. And, you know, we're working on follow-up films with them and some others we've worked with before to try and put together events, you know, that help sustain and edify and build out the creative community in Dallas. So all of that's on the table right now. We're very much in the renovation phase and making sure we nail the facility. And as we progress through that over the next couple months, and that's getting closer to being complete in the first quarter or so of next year, we'll start to ramp up the plan for, you know, events and other ways to kind of creatively utilize the space.
We are talking with Stephen Demler. He is the overseer of Southside Studios, the TV production complex based in Dallas, Texas, now undergoing extensive and expanded renovations, which will open up early in 2024. And he joins us live from Tampa, Florida this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you just joined us, this is the concluding installment of our 16th year on the air. We go into year 17 on Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, and we're happy to have you with us. Tom and Avon with you live from New York, 77 beauty, cloudy degrees after the bottom of the hour. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We get into year 17 with our annual anniversary show, which we do the first Monday of August. And as we did last year, we're going to do a two-hour episode with an executive guest each hour for the full hour. And our opening hour guest will be the head of programming at the CW, Brad Schwartz. We'll talk to him about what's going on with the CW, including The Chosen, which, by the way, has been renewed for a fourth season and did get a waiver from the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA to stay in production despite their strike, now in week 4 as of today. And also we'll talk about the LIV Golf Tour, the other expansion in sports that the CW is doing, including coverage of the Atlantic Coast Conference football and basketball starting next month, and the other interesting things going on with that network. And you can call him live with your questions and feedback. That's Brad Schwartz, programming head of the CW, live, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific. And we should point out, too, 2 to 3 p.m. Central, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. That's coming your way Monday as we kick off year 17 of the program All About TV's current and future. Stephen, why do you think The Chosen has really hit a nerve with the audience to the point where here is a show that has been crowdfunded all the way in terms of production costs? It is not – it's running – on the CW, but that's after it's run on Netflix, it's run on other smart TV mega content services, or as part of multi-channel bundles, and it seems to be no end in sight in terms of the success of that program.
Yeah, no, there does seem to be no end in sight in terms of its success. I think I don't think it's crazy to say it may be an underserved community in content created at a high level specifically for them, right? There is so much content, and there is content for that community now, but it's being executed now by a group that puts out, you know, that really understands how to structure a project and how to put out just really kind of beautiful work. I believe it's the same studio, right, who does that, has the film right now that's just kind of crushing the box office. And that's because they understand what their audience is looking to hear and looking to connect with, and telling stories that are kind of grounded and honest and meaningful for them. And then pulling it off again, you can do that and put out a bad product, right? And it doesn't connect in the way it has. So it's all of those things coming together that I think have given the tailwind for The Chosen and some of the Angel Studios' other projects.
There is this growing boom of what would some people call faith-based or faith and family movies. And, of course, we are now seeing that with Sound of Freedom, which just crossed the $100
yeah.
million dollar, mark at the theatrical box office. What about have you heard from other producers like Angel Studios, which makes The Chosen, who are interested in maybe having faith and family or faith-based series, TV series, scripted, unscripted, shooting from Southside?
We've spoken with The Chosen specifically about future work with them. They're storing some of their sets while they're dark right now, actually, on our property. Hopefully that works out because that's Chad and some of the people of that team are wonderful people, so that would be great. As far as future stuff, nothing specifically for Southside yet. I've had other projects come across my desk in our, my company's capacity as executive producers, right, so film financiers. But the trouble so far has been at least what was passed to us isn't as well written as The Chosen or Sound of Freedom, right? All good projects start with story. I think because of The Chosen and because of The Sound of Freedom, you're going to get an influx of projects, right? And therefore, there will also be more higher quality, better written projects, right, that come through that. And I think we're going to see a large bump in that. I think this is probably the beginning of that swell.
Mm-hmm. What role is artificial intelligence going to play in your renovation of Southside?
What role not a ton. I suppose a little bit, right? And it's insofar as we're going to have kind of a state-of-the-art virtual production studio. There's a lot of ways that AI aids that process. It can be involved in environment creation, for the wall in the 3D engine and some of the software that the robotic cameras are running on are all aided by AI. But in terms of us deploying it in a way more advanced than perhaps optimizing our space and our operations at the studio, we're going to kind of be more watching that happen. As a studio, we're not making the AI decisions that you're hearing about in the SAG contracts, like scanning extras and all that. That's not what we are as a studio. We're kind of a facilitator of shooting projects versus, going through those projects as a studio like a Netflix or Amazon might.
Since you brought up the situation with SAG and AFTRA, and we just had the Writers Guild, which, of course, is hopefully meeting as we speak with the head of the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers to try to get everybody back to the image. What do you think about what's going on with these strikes?
Yeah, I think it's the right moment for both the WGA and SAG to kind of take a stand together. It's the economics of film and TV are so complicated. So in one way, as a film financier, I do understand the concerns about cost, and a lot of the major studios have to, they're kind of beholden to reporting their results quarterly, which affects so much of their financials and their credit worthiness, right? So I get that. However, I think it's obvious to say that not enough of the creative pies in the financial pies flowing back to those who drive the creation of this, right? There aren't stories without writers, and the stories don't come to life without the SAG members. And the fact that so many struggle to get something so basic as health insurance is just kind of appalling to me. So I hope, I hope this is, now that both have gone on strike, I hope the resolution comes much sooner than later, and that it's, it takes care of the people pouring in 12, 16-hour days of work to create the content and create these stories that we connect with and love, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing, as we've mentioned a number of times over recent weeks, is that it's very important that everybody get back to that bargaining table, all three organizations, and that that people realize two things. One, all the rhetoric, all the picketing, all the back and forth name calling, and making any organization wrong whatsoever, that's not going to make a deal. It's time for people to get back at that bargaining table and not wait for the other. It's like SAG is saying, well, we want to wait for AMPTP to make the move. No, you make the move. And the other thing, too, is a lot of people forgetting that this strike is affecting more than just writers and actors, as crazy as interesting as the issues are. It's also impacting directors and cinematographers and film editors and all people at studio production complexes like yours because they're out of work. And nothing is and very few things are happening unless they get a SAG-AFTRA waiver or they get scripts in hand from the Writers Guild.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's true. The tenor of it has been pretty vitriolic, right? Like, it's certainly not a supportive one, but I think, you know, we gotta at least appreciate the circumstances that led to that, right? But not dwell on it, right? You can't ignore why everybody feels that way in the position each group is in. But you have to keep pressing forward. So, you know, that's to say is, like, I agree, but understand where that sentiment comes from.
Well, there's two observations about that, Stephen. One is, you're right, there's two routes, basically, to the vitriol. One is the residual, that we are in a new environment of television making where the residuals, what people get off making a program, whether it's a writer or an actor, in an era where it's not 22 episodes a year or a season that gets produced on a scripted show, it's now 10 or 8 or 6 by the likes of a Netflix or a Peacock or Prime Video or Max, et cetera. The second thing is artificial intelligence. It is a fast-moving warp speed target, and people want parameters, or as some people call the guardrails, so that they don't face the possibility of being obsolete. I often use the obsolete man episode metaphor of the Twilight Zone to make the point. And yes, I mean, these are two. However, no settlement unless people talk. As opposed to people
no, agreed. You got to, yeah, yeah.
The other thing
I will say one thing.
Go ahead. No, I was saying
the other thing is that
I am absolutely shocked personally, personal thought, at the behavior of the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers. They have played the role of cowards. They will not talk to the press. They will not come on this program or make their case in the media about what's going on. And they're hiding behind press releases and quick statements and talking points. And I think their PR has been absolutely atrocious. And it's actually hurt. It is expanded the situation. It's enraged the situation, if you will. It's fueled the vitriol.
Sure. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it would be insane, I think, for me to disagree with that. I will say one way Southside is going to approach supporting WGA and SAG in a way we think is correct, and indie producers, right, and indie studios, indie filmmakers, is we're looking to be, thanks to the partnership that's putting Southside together, is we're looking to be as creative as possible as we can with the space. That is to say, if we can find a good indie film production company that has two or three films, let's say three films that they want to shoot, and if they can come and do a deal at Southside, we're looking to maybe have them kind of do two of the films at market rates, and then the third, I'm going to pledge the studio to the project for free, right? We'll take the back-end points, but no hard dollars up front to help lessen the cost of all three projects blended across. That way, indie producers can put up slates, right, and save some money to spend on talent. And then what we're going to do at Southside is take those points, right, from that one film, that third film of the set of three, and demarcate some of the points for the Southside crews, right, that are working on the project so that they're not just earning their salary from the productions but also getting some of the upside for the projects we're kind of helping stand up that might not have otherwise been able to stand up economically. It's a similar idea to what I think it's Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are doing at Artist Equity, right? It's give the people making the projects a taste of the success of the project. In a way that makes, you know, may still allows the economics of the project as a whole to make sense and be able to, you know, continue producing films.
Stephen Demiere is our guest this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He is the overseer of Southside Studios, the Dallas-based TV and film production complex. He joins us live from Tampa, Florida this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Great to have you with us wherever you are. Simon Abbott with you live from Nueva York, 77 degrees approaching the top of the hour. And let's hear from you in our remaining minutes with Stephen. Give a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up after the top of the hour, we'll have our classic trivia question. We'll have our takeaway of the week, the changing landscape of college football on television. There's a lot of changes coming your way this fall, and wait about next fall when the college football playoff expands. And we'll also have some closing thoughts about what the last 12 months, year 16 of this program, have delivered in the TV world and what may be next. That's all coming up in our final half hour. Stephen, when the renovation is complete, what about the possibility of using Southside as a home for animators or people who want to combine live action and animated projects?
That would be incredible. We're going to have the facilities for all of that. It's part of the post-production facilities. We're going to have audio recording studios, coloring studios, VFX studios. Again, the wall will be there. The LED volume will be there if they want to mix and match. But otherwise, the facility really will be built as an extremely malleable kind of Swiss Army knife property that can handle everything from, you know, high-end Toyota commercials, local commercials, to, you know, a David Lowery film, right, that's artistic and beautiful and, you know, Academy Award nominated and all that, to a Hallmark movie or The Chosen. We're building it so that it can meet the needs of whoever comes to Dallas, right? And I think we're well positioned to do that in terms of the size and the scale and the amenities we're putting in. And then the incentive has helped us be able to be more creative flexibly, more creative financially rather. And the other nice thing I didn't mention before about the new Texas incentive is that, you know, it's 20% for projects $3.5 million and above. But if you shoot at our studio and your production offices are at Southside, you get a 2.5% bump on top of that. So it's automatically one of the most economical places to shoot your projects, your large-scale projects in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask the same question I asked Peter in the first half hour. What about Spanish language television? And maybe using Southside as a way to expand your place as a home for Spanish language programming, whether it is scripted weekly series or nightly or daily telenovela series. Where the shows are done in the United States with Latino writers, producers, and directors.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do. I caught his answer to that, and, you know, completely agree that it's an important market. It's a growing market. Southside, I think, given its location in Dallas, is a wonderful spot for that, right? It's easy travel, but at its core, Southside is being built to service film, TV, commercials, as a whole, right? It doesn't matter who the target audience is, and that's why we've built it as flexibly as we have. So it's just about, can those projects, you know, stand up economically, and if so, how can Southside help make that happen? And we're excited to participate however we can, no matter who the audience is.
Hmm. Before you go, Stephen, in the last few years, we have seen a boom in terms of new studio spaces. Netflix, for example, and Lionsgate have built or are building new studio places in New Jersey, in Newark specifically. Lionsgate now is a facility in Westchester County, right above the Bronx in New York City. Albuquerque, New Mexico has become a major place. Netflix has studios there. Is there any plans to replicate what you're doing with Southside in Dallas elsewhere?
Yes. The short answer is yes, because I think the situation of the industry is that despite all of those new facilities you just mentioned, the need for content has grown much faster than soundstage space has, right? So I still believe we're several years away from parity, right, between supply and demand of soundstage space to content. So there's absolutely an opportunity for us to grow. I think right now, myself and my partners are exclusively focused on doing a great job in Dallas, right? If I do a great job at Southside, the next opportunity will present itself, right? We're not the kind of team that's going to put the cart before the horse, right? We have a great property and a great location. We have kind of great industry relationships and a great runway, but we still have to finish assembling the plane and then take off and not crash, right? So I do think there is an opportunity for growth. I think we're going to see it keep happening, not just for us, but for other competitors and, you know, colleagues are going to keep pursuing that for several more years, I believe. But we're kind of all in on Dallas right now.
If you want more details about Southside Studios, their renovation underway that will be completed early in 2024, and the TV and film productions that will be happening there, here's where you go online, SouthsideStudiosDallas.com. That's all one phrase, SouthsideStudiosDallas.com. Stephen Demler, the overseer of Southside, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting the renovation expansion of your complex underway. And hopefully in times to come, we'll focus on some of the shows that you'll be doing there. It's been great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Simon. Really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too, and a super weekend. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Stephen Demler, the owner of Southside Studios, joining us live from Tampa, Florida. When we come back, classic trivia question of the week, third time that we're offering the question with two prizes in play, and then our takeaway of the week, the changing landscape of college football television, and some final thoughts about what the last 12 months, year 16 of this program, have brought you, the TV viewer. All that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you like something different in audio entertainment, check out Rock This Town Radio this Sunday on Blog Talk Radio, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Rock This Town like nobody's business with Rock This Town Radio, Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best Beach Art 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of year 16 of the program All About TV's Current and Future, the program. Tomorrow will be televised. And welcome those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Avon with you live from New York, 77 degrees, cloudy skies. We're supposed to get maybe some showers later on today, and then a gorgeous weekend ahead. And we hope whatever the weather is out there, it's gorgeous for you as well. And for those of you just joining us, we want to welcome those of you that are listening to us on podcasts, on a whole bunch of new podcast sites that have joined us as our family of podcast affiliates over the last few weeks, like AntennaPod, Castomatic, CastBox, Bullhorn, GoodPods, Fountain, Jam, G-Potter, Luminary, Podcast Republic, PodStation, Moon FM, Overcast, Podcast Guru, and Steno.fm. Nearly 40, that's right, nearly 40 podcast destinations. And if you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes on the air, make a call, 646-652-2906. Even if you just want to say hi and congratulations on reaching year 16 and finishing it up powerfully and getting year 17 off the ground on Monday. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room going. Get into it. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And let's get into our classic trivia question of the week. We're wrapping up our first week offering the question. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win a Chicago Greatest Hits CD with such super tunes as Another Rainy Day in New York City, If You Leave Me Now, Saturday in the Park, Feeling Stronger Every Day, Does Everybody Know What Time It Is, and other great tunes from that super group. And an Uber card courtesy of AMC Networks. Here's the question. Who played the Thin Man on TV? Remember the Thin Man movies with Myrna Loy and William Powell as Nora and Nick Charles? And, of course, the Thin Man was William Powell's character. Set of great movies produced by MGM. In the late 1950s, MGM did a television series on NBC, and we want to know who played the Thin Man on TV. The series ran two seasons on NBC. Phyllis Kirk was the co-star as Nora Charles. We want to know who played Nick Charles in that series. And by the way, episodes are available on YouTube. Who played the Thin Man on television? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address when you email. If you're a previous winner or a guest of this program, you're not eligible. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win the Chicago Greatest Hits CD and the AMC Networks provided Uber card. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, this Friday, we will post the question tomorrow, Saturday morning, on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter or X at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum or X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. One more time, the question, who played the Thin Man on television? SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. Get in the game today. In order to win, you got to be in. Do so today. And all the very best. And now it's time for our regular Friday feature, which we've had for most of this. We started early on in the 16th year on the air, called The Takeaway of the Week. And we want to thank those of you that have commented about it. We really appreciate your thoughts. Takeaway of the Week is where we highlight a development or two that takes place over the course of the week that we think you should know and really appreciate, because it definitely will impact the way you watch and use television in the future. And our takeaway this week is the changing landscape of college football television. Yes, we are a month away from starting a new college football season, and it's very clear that this college football season is going to have a changing TV landscape. For example, if you are looking forward to the Southeast Conference games Saturday afternoons on CBS, you won't find them there. You will find them on ESPN. Why? Because they got the contract. So what will CBS do in that 3 p.m. time period? Well, they will have college football from several conferences, including the Big Ten, which made a deal with NBC as well for games. And as a result, Big Ten games, you will not see them, unless very rarely, on ESPN. You will see them starting Saturday night on NBC. So NBC is finally going to get into the college football scene in a bigger way than ever before. You know that they've done the Notre Dame home games for years. Well, now they're doing the Big Ten games on Saturday night. You may have seen those Here Comes Saturday Night promos all over NBC and Peacock and all over the place. Well, starting in early September, NBC and Peacock will simulcast Big Ten games at night. Plus, they'll also do games in the early afternoon, 12 noon to 3:30 p.m. window. So that will not be on Fox anymore or FX. They'll probably have other. They will have other games, though, in that time period. And in case you haven't heard, Noah Eagle, the son of Ian Eagle, will be the play-by-play person for the primetime NBC Peacock Big Ten games with Todd Blackledge, formerly the second popular analyst on ESPN behind Kirk Herbstreit. He will be Noah Eagle's partner. And Catherine Tappan will be the sideline reporter. Also, Maria Taylor, who does the Football Night in America programming on Sunday nights on NBC Peacock before Sunday football games, she will also be doing a similar hour-long pregame show on Saturday nights, probably at 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, or 6 p.m. Pacific time, depending on how the schedule goes. Now, one area of the landscape that we haven't settled yet is the Pac-10 or the Pac-12, or really is now the Pac-9 because Colorado and UCLA and UCLA are leaving that conference for the Big 12 or other conferences. What we don't know yet is what's going to happen with the Pac-12 or Pac-9's deal. We had heard earlier in the week that Apple was going to get a deal to run the games on Apple TV Plus, on Apple TV set-top boxes, and other smart TV sets and devices, multi-channel bundles. Now, we hear that they have the Pac-12 officials have gotten a proposal from Apple. However, yesterday, when Apple had their quarterly report and Tim Cook was on the conference call with investors and analysts, there was no mention of a Pac-12 deal. So you have to wonder what is going on. And that could very well impact, if not this year, next year, Fox's Pac-12 contract, which includes the conference championship game. So there's going to be all sorts of interesting situations. And let's not forget another thing that we talked about earlier, which is that starting in September, Atlantic Coast Conference football games that were in syndication to regional sports networks, they are now moving to the CW starting in early September. And there'll be weekend afternoon games probably in the 1 to 4 p.m. or, that's right, 1 or 12 noon to 3:30 or 1 to 4:30 p.m. time period. And hopefully we'll hear more about that on Monday from Brad Schwartz, the head of programming at the CW, who will be our first hour guest for our special 17th anniversary edition when we kick off year 17. That's Monday, by the way, at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. So bottom line, there is a huge changing landscape in the college football television world, And if you think that's something, don't forget that starting next year, 2024 into 2025, the college football playoff on ESPN is going to expand from 4 teams to at least 12, which means that more of the existing bowl games will now be used as playoff games. So we can see how that turns out. I personally would like to see it go to 16 teams, and that way you can schedule the games on a weekly basis. Have 8 games the first week, then 4, then 2, then 1. And with ESPN, ESPN2, and their family networks, you can make the first 2 weeks happen. So anyway, that is coming your way in 2024-25, and it'll be interesting to see what goes on there. So there is no question that your way you watch college football on television, whether you watch it on broadcast, whether you watch it on cable, or watch it on satellite, or watch it through mega content services like Peacock and Paramount Plus and so forth, the times, they are a-changing. And they're going to keep on changing, especially as more and more teams switch conferences. And maybe along the way, we'll see a conference go El Foldo, and we'll see maybe just super conferences give you the majority of the action. And that is our takeaway of the week. So here we are. We are at the end, the completion of our 16th year on the air. This has been a fast last 12 months to get through. And as Craig Ferguson used to say near the end of his Late Late Show when he was running that program on CBS, what have we learned over these last 12 months? So I thought we would end the program today with some year 16 end thoughts about that. And the first thought is this. There is no doubt anymore where you and your loyalty of television is. It's with smart TV sets, it's with smart TV devices, it's with mega content services from Netflix to Hulu to Max to Paramount Plus to Peacock and so forth. And it is to a fast-growing array of new programming services running on smart TV sets and smart devices and multi-channel bundles, both free, on-demand, and by subscription. And what growth there has been, a whole variety of new programming players. And some of those bundles are being put together by the smart TV set and device makers themselves. Samsung has a bundle, and Vizio has a bundle, and LG has a bundle, and Hisense has a bundle, and Roku has a bundle, et cetera, et cetera. And these bundles, incidentally, have anywhere from 200, 300, 400 individual channels and rising. And let's not forget the bundles like Tubi and Plex and Philo TV and Pluto TV and Frndly TV, Zumo, on and on and on. That is the way we, the American public, and growing the world public, is watching television. The viewership is up, the time spent is up, and the advertising dollars are going there. And broadcast and cable viewership by itself is going down, 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 to the point where fewer and fewer original shows are being produced for cable networks. And more, when you watch a show on CBS, or you watch a show on NBC, or you watch a show on CW, et cetera, it's not only being live linearly on broadcast, it's also on a multi-channel, on a mega content service. Paramount Plus in the case of CBS, Peacock in the case of NBC, Tubi, the multi-channel bundle in the case of Fox, Next Day, Hulu, and Disney Plus, sometimes simultaneous, sometimes Next Day, and CW, the CW app, which more and more is becoming a smart TV app. It's truly amazing. Another thing that is very clear is that we had a curveball, and the curveball is the writer's strike, now approaching 100 days, and the Screen Actors Guild after strike, now in its fourth week. It has brought production to a standstill, with the exception of some productions that have gotten waivers from the actors and their union. It's also very clear that there's two basic reasons why this strike or these strikes are happening. And they're both, in a way, consequences of the smart TV, smart device, multi-channel bundle viewership movement, the embracing of you, the public, to these products and services. The first is that when Netflix produces a series, or Peacock, or Max, or whatever, it's not the 22-episode order that we're so used to on broadcast and cable. It's not the 13-week order with 9 more if you make it through the first half of the season. It's 10 episodes, 8 episodes, and in some cases, 6 episodes. And that means for writers and actors, it's a whole new environment under which they are paid, under which they get residuals for their work. And this is something that has been brewing for a long time. And the second thing is artificial intelligence. It is artificial intelligence, the ability through artificial intelligence, audio and video software, through these smart TV products that allows people through Alexa, through Siri, Google Assistant, other audio features, to watch and use the television set with their voice, with a voice remote, to play games on the television set without using a PlayStation or a Wii or an Xbox. Just use your voice remote, body language, or a joystick-type device you aim at the TV set and play, 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 either by yourself or with others. And we are in an environment where artificial intelligence, no question about it, is going to be a major way how television programming is created, produced, and maybe become interactive in all sorts of ways. It is a warp feed development, and both the writers and the actors' unions have a huge beef that if some sort of parameter, some sort of guardrail, maybe more than one, is not established, no matter what directions or how quickly artificial intelligence evolves and becomes mainstream in television creation and production, that these groups of people will become obsolete. And trust me, the vitriol is unlike anything that has happened in labor disputes involving Hollywood organizations. And that is why the meeting that either is about to take place or is now starting to take place between two key people at the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers and the Writers Guild is so important. Because these strikes have already had a devastating impact on television. Award shows have been postponed or canceled or totally reworked because of these strikes. The MTV Movie and TV Awards, the Tony Awards, which almost did not get going. The Primetime Emmys have been delayed. The Daytime Emmys have been delayed. And other award shows may be in danger of also being pushed back or canceled, unless there is a deal with both of these unions. You can say goodbye to broadcast television having a regular fall season. You're going to see more unscripted TV. You're going to see more documentary programming. You're going to see more game shows on the broadcast networks. And if you do see scripted, it's either going to be reruns, like, for example, Abbott Elementary on ABC for an hour on Wednesday nights, or as the CW is doing, you will see more scripted productions from Canada, England, Australia, other sources. And some of them might make it because the quality of shows, particularly from Canada, has really grown up over the last decade or two. This is no longer a second-class citizen country when it comes to TV production. And if you've seen shows on the CW like Moonshine and Son of a Critch, whose executive producers have been on this program in recent weeks, you're knowing that the quality is really superb. If these deals don't get done, you're going to see ultimately a hiccup in terms of original material from the mega content services and from other services, and other services that may want to get going in a big way may not be able to. Trust me, there are a lot of people who want to get into scripted television. I totally am against the grain in the thinking that the peak TV or the plentiful, I call it the plentiful TV era, is gone and gone for good. No way. Trust me, when these strikes get settled, look out world, there's going to be an eruption of new scripted TV projects getting into production fast. And there is the studio space to handle it and the studio space to come. And finally, another thing we've learned is that we should be ready for an explosion of interactive television. There's games, game hubs along the lines of LG and Samsung. Samsung is now offering 3,000 games, which you can play on your television set. Again, without a PlayStation or an Xbox or another similar console. We're seeing more telehealth services on the TV set, teleeducation on the TV set. Interactive advertising is booming. Keep your eye on Roku with the Action Ads and their deal with Shopify, where some of Shopify's national clients, new television advertisers, will allow you to order their products and services to the TV set. And yes, we may be on the verge of sports betting through the TV set. We may be on the verge of more of a whole video commerce era, where you order products and services and pay for them through your television set, your voice control or voice remote, a special device on the set top, or your body language. This last year has been really a prep year for finally, at long last, a breakout on many levels. And one of the things we're going to keep watching, again, is Telly, this free TV set, which as many as 500,000 people will get to use before the end of this year. And if they like what they're getting, which is basically the TV equivalent of the iPhone with new apps available every month and the amount of apps growing and going, Telly is promising to make millions more next year and get them out there. And if they do, it'll be interesting to see how the Samsungs and LGs and Hisenses and TCLs of the world, how will they respond? Will they make their sets free? And what new services will they deploy on them? It's been an amazing 12 months, the 16th year of this program. And I want to take a moment to thank all of you out there who have tuned in, who've offered your feedback in various ways about the guests we have, the topics that we cover. Thank you to Blog Talk Radio, our home base, for your editorial freedom and getting the program on the air. Thank you to our simulcast partners, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio. Thank you to all the nearly 40 podcast platforms that are now taking the program. Thank you to On Podium for tomorrowbetelevised.com and our wonderful partnership with you, and hopefully we'll expand that in the year ahead. We'll have more to say about, by the way, that starting on Monday. And, of course, thanks to all of you out there, because there's no show that runs as long as we have without you. Your listening, your support, it's deeply appreciated. And that thank you is humbly extended to all the guests we've had on the program this year. We've had a tremendous variety of guests, and so superb. And I also want to thank the public relations people that we deal with all over the place, both at the various networks and services and products, as well as the independent PR agencies, many of whom are hurting right now because of the lack of business from the strike or strikes. that are always in our corner. We really appreciate it. And I promise you that starting Monday, we're going to make year 17 bigger, better, greater than ever. And we'll start to explain how on Monday. Again, I want to thank our guest, Peter Scott, the Chief Strategy Officer at Play Anywhere. I promise you we'll stay in touch with them to hear what projects they're involved with. And Stephen Demir from Southside Studios in Dallas, Texas, both for joining us today. Remember, coming up on Monday, we are back at our regular time, starting year 17 at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, our special anniversary episode, two-hour edition. Our first hour guest will be Brad Schwartz, the head of programming for the CW. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go anytime you like to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, immediately we also go into those nearly 40 podcast platforms from the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and Acast and Podvine and Spotify and Verbal and Podbean, Player.fm, to our newbies like Atenapod and Caspon and Vent and Fountain and Fathom and G Potter and Podcast Republic, PodStation, Moon FM, Overcast, et cetera, et cetera. And you can do that anytime you like. And as always, we want to hear what you think about our program. And more importantly, what do you think about the world of television, where it's at and where it is going? And remember, if we get your thoughts and use them on the air, you get the credit. So sure to email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Enclose your name and your mailing address. Don't forget, use that for our classic trivia question feature and our regular feature, Show to Know. Is there a show you like that deserves more attention than it's getting? Let me know. We use suggestion on the air. You get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. You also find me on social media, Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum and ex-Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. However you respond to me, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That's been our promise from the get-go and still will be in year 17 because what you say matters now more than ever. You bet. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not fellows of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website certified by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Fakus is our great web coordinator and partner. For tomorrow be televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening these last 12 months, year 16. We are now complete. We'll be back on Monday, regular time, for year 17, our anniversary edition. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Wherever you are, thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend ahead, and whatever you're doing this weekend, make sure you make it great and safe and sound. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.